funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How are artists in Mexico exploring the many social, cultural, and economic forces shaping contemporary life there? A new exhibition that opened this week at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth brings together a broad cross-section of influential artists working in Mexico. And as we'll hear in this story from Art and Seek's Stephen Becker, it offers perspective on some turning points in late 20th century Mexican history that have played a part in the domestic and international dialogue of artists working there.
The first piece you encounter in the exhibition looks more like something you'd see at a rec center. It's a pair of ping pong tables that intersect to form an X. In the middle is a shallow 4-foot square pond complete with lily pads.
Instead of you being a passive participant as you walk through, you're actively engaged in this ping pong game. It's an entirely different way to engage a work of art.
That's Andrea Carnes, who spent 4 years curating the exhibition for The Modern. It's one of the most ambitious looks at contemporary Mexican art in the last decade. Artist Gabriel Orozco's take on ping pong is a lot harder than just having to hit a ball over a tiny net. You've got to really think about how you're going to navigate the game. It's a perfect way for visitors to reset their minds for experiencing life in Mexico. There are more than 60 artworks in the exhibition. Some can stand on their own as beautiful objects, like Thomas Glassford's collection of 7,000 broomsticks painted in a rainbow of colors. And some require a thorough reading of the description on the wall. Mexican artist Artemio has piled up 27,000 kilos of dirt taken from the Juarez Desert in one corner of a gallery. After a little reading, we learn that the dirt weighs roughly the same as 450 women, all factory workers, who've disappeared over the years. They're presumed dead and buried in that desert. Later, in a corridor, we're invited to press our ears against a wall to listen to letters being read aloud.
My unforgettable husband, I greet you lovingly, as I usually do. I'm writing you this letter to find out, how is everything at home? How are you? How are my children and all the family?
The letters in Idiad Rodriguez's piece are from patients of what was once Mexico City's largest psychiatric hospital. Hearing the voices reminds us that these letters were written by real people, which makes it all the more tragic when we learn that the hospital was shut down by the Mexican government. The government wanted to rid the city of undesirable citizens ahead of the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City. In fact, that time period saw a number of instances in which the country clashed with its people as it attempted to dress up for the world. Andrea Carnes, the curator, says the era has had a lasting effect on Mexican artists.
That moment defined a lot of what artists in Mexico are still dealing with today. It was kind of a break from the institution. It was the beginning of artists who, at that time, didn't care whether they were in the institution or not. They started to open alternative spaces, these kind of DIY spaces all over Mexico City, and just do their own exhibitions. Now, ironically, they're the ones sought after.
Much of the art deals with specific events in Mexico's recent history, but one piece stands out as a bridge to the present. In Francis Ali's video installation, we hear a brass band rehearsing a song. But in the video, all we see is a red Volkswagen Beetle driving up a steep dirt road. When the band makes a mistake and stops, the Beetle rolls sadly back down the hill. Each time the car attempts to climb, we root for it. It gets tantalizingly close. But in the half-hour-long video, it never makes it over the hump. The piece is a fitting metaphor for Mexico's attempts to modernize, and it asks us to consider what we've seen in the video and the exhibition as a whole. Pessimists will point to a car, and by extension, a country, that never can quite make it to the goal. But optimists will note that it never stops trying. Stephen Becker, KERA News.
Joining us now for a longer conversation on Mexico Inside Out, themes in art since 1990, is the woman you heard interviewed in Stephen's story, Andrea Carnes, who is curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. Andrea, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris. I'm thrilled to be here.
How did the idea come about to feature artists living and working in Mexico in a show of this magnitude?
Well, this is a question I've been asked a lot since the exhibition opened. And the sort of short answer is, I, as a curator, travel around the world and look at art and research artists. And everywhere I went, Tokyo, Venice, all around the U.S., I see some of the artists in this exhibition who matured in the 1990s, especially sort of the historical anchors of the exhibition. I see their work across the globe, but I hadn't seen it in our area, and that just did not make sense to me. I mean, we're one of four states that border Mexico. We're neighbors. It seems like we should have a dialogue.
And it's interesting because it does seem that people who live in Texas would have a different perspective on some of the things being explored here than people who don't have a direct relationship to the culture.
Definitely. You know, the idea that you can get on a flight from DFW and 2 hours later, it's nothing, be in the middle of Mexico City is pretty incredible. And of course, we have people who migrated from Mexico here who are looking back at their country. Maybe they still have family there, or some who were born here but have roots there. Of course, we have a long history between Texas and Mexico for many reasons. So, yeah, it seemed like a good dialogue to open up, and this seemed like the right way to do it.
So talk about the title, Mexico Inside Out. What kinds of ideas are you looking to explore here through the pieces that you've put together and will sit next to one another in the museum?
Well, the exhibition is really an exploration by these artists, an intense exploration of daily life. And as a way of organizing the exhibition and the catalog, I broke daily life down into three categories. The first is building contemporary monuments. The second is interrogating systems of power. And the third is magnifying the everyday. So that really, the daily life thing is really what the exhibition is about. Some of those issues are intensely local to Mexico, but they can be understood in this, you know, in this, on this universal level. I mean, to some degree or another, we can all relate to issues of violence or corruption or, you know, strives toward progress or failed attempts at something or humor or all of the things that the exhibition has, we can access no matter if we were born in Mexico or not. So it's the idea that it's inside Mexico, local, but it's also out, global.
It's also a reminder, this is not, you know, the kind, when people, I think, unfortunately, when people think Mexican art today, they still go back to, you know, very gifted artists, but they're thinking Frida Kahlo, you know, instead of what is happening right now.
Right. I agree. The exhibition is kind of shocking in what you see when you arrive at the museum. The artists in this exhibition are in a real dialogue with art history and contemporary art across the globe. So that's why they've shown internationally. So what they bring to the table are things that are about Mexico and things going on socially and politically in Mexico, but things that relate to the art world at large. So we see some of all of that.
I referenced earlier artworks within the museum, but in fact, they're inside, they're outside,
right.
You've been moving walls. I mean, talk a little bit about the challenges of the installation of all of these works.
Well, the installation took about 4 weeks of working literally day and night with a large crew. And the Modern has never done an exhibition on this scale before. So it really challenged the building, you know, the staff, all of us, but we were also invigorated by the prospect of that. So we have several works that are site-specific done by the artist for our museum. And so that was another new thing. You know, sometimes as a curator, you have to wait until close to the end, even if you've seen preparatory sketches, to really know what's in the exhibition. Mm-hmm. And it took all of 4 weeks to get it together.
And then there's a lot of needs to manage, right, on the part of the artist, because they can say, I need these materials to be delivered on this date, but they're sort of having to share space with each other and that sort of thing.
Logistically, yes. There was so much to think about. And when you're crossing a border and dealing with customs and you're moving works of art that are crated up, yes, there were definitely issues to be dealt with. And that's why this exhibition took almost 4 years. I mean, part of that was research. And another part of it, honestly, another hurdle was talking the artists who are in the exhibition into being in the exhibition. And it's not that they didn't want to, but artists, like anyone else, do not like to be pigeonholed or or kind of, you know, categorized. And so I had to do a lot of explaining and talking about the exhibition and explain it more of a theme show about daily life than of a survey of what's happening in Mexico, because they don't want to just be categorized as Mexican artist. But the thing is, they all came around in the end because they realized that it is a themed show and it is important, since there has not been an exhibition like this that focuses on Mexico in our area. They realized, just like I do, that though it may be problematic, it's important to make a big introduction, and then we can go deeper later or look at some of these artists more intensely later in the future.
So the story that we heard from Stephen Becker referred back to 1968 and this being really a year of great transition in the art community that set up some big changes. Can you talk a little bit about why it was such a watershed moment in the artistic community?
Yes, many artists and critics and scholars mark this moment as a turn toward a new avant-garde in art. The Tlatelolco massacre happened on October 2nd in 1968, and this was a time when all eyes were on Mexico internationally because of the coming Summer Olympics. So students of UNAM, the university in Mexico City, organized a peaceful protest against an oppressive government. And they marched through the city, ending up in this certain section of Mexico City in a plaza in Tlatelolco. And what happened was the government took a hard line and bulldozed the plaza and arrested people and opened fire. It was a moment of a loss of innocence. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, or another loss of innocence in Mexico in the 20th century. And it changed the way, you know, these were students involved in the counterculture anyway, but it changed their attitude toward art institutions. And artists who were coming out of that began to instigate their own installations and exhibitions in alternative spaces and outside of the institution.
So this idea that officials are not going to be the sole arbiters of what's important.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're going to take matters into our own hand. This is a DIY situation. We're going to find little spaces. We're going to do it on no money. And people are going to come and we're going to start a dialogue. And that's what they started at that time. Then as we get closer to the artist in this exhibition, you know, comes the dawning of globalization and information travels more freely. So now when we get closer to the 80s or the mid 80s to early 90s, these artists start to have access to European conceptualism and American conceptualism and sort of the canon of art history that they weren't being taught in the universities in Mexico. Still at the university level in the 60s, 70s, and throughout most of the 80s, if you were an art or art history student, you're still looking at Mexican nationalist muralist painters, mm-hmm. basically.
Which is wonderful, but it's certainly an incomplete art history education.
It's an incomplete picture. And these guys in the exhibition, especially the ones who, again, I'm calling the historical anchors to the exhibition, like Francis Elise and Gabriel Orozco and Melanie Smith and Abram Cruz Villegas and many more, were seeking information about what was happening globally. And that's another reason for the title being Inside Out.
My guest is Andrea Carnes. She's curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and of the exhibition Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990, that will be on exhibit at the museum through January 5th of 2014. If you'd like to join the conversation, join us now at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/mls.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Andrea Carnes, curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and of the new show Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990, which is on exhibit there through January 5th of 2014. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I was interested that there are a number of artists here who are not Mexican-born but have been living and working there for a number of years. What did you think about in deciding that this person who maybe from England or Belgium was sort of representative still of Mexican art today?
Well, the artists in the exhibition who are not born in Mexico have all lived there for over 20 years in Mexico City. Two of the three of them are Mexican citizens now. So I didn't have any problem including them in the exhibition. They're a part of the history of art, of contemporary art in Mexico, and they've contributed quite a lot to the scene in Mexico and globally to represent Mexico. For example, Melanie Smith, who was born in England but has lived in Mexico City since the late 1980s, represented Mexico in the Mexican Pavilion at the Venice Biennale in 2011. So these people are a part of the Mexican art scene.
And did you have a chance to talk to them about what drew them there in the first place?
Yes. They were young art students, and they were looking for a big city that was affordable. I mean, it was just sort of everybody's story. And I mean, you know, to graduate from school and not know, wanting to go somewhere new, wanting to go to a place that, to them, coming from England or Belgium, was quite exotic, to go all the way to Mexico. You know, for us here in Texas, we're so close, we know about that culture in a different way than they did. But they knew that they could afford it, and they knew that there was kind of a scene starting to brew there. But they bravely went after the earthquake.
Yeah, the earthquake is another real turning point in contemporary Mexican history. This is the one in 1985. Will you talk about that?
That was sort of another watershed moment for the new or the current avant-garde in Mexico. So the city, the actual failing of architectural structures in Mexico City symbolized for many of these artists and many citizens at that time in Mexico the crumbling government and the failings of the government, the promises of modernity, the failed attempts at modernity. And so it becomes another moment where artists are saying, wait a minute, we don't want to be a part of this conversation. We want to have our own spaces. We want to instigate our own things, to have a political or a social discussion outside of the institution. And that's what they did.
There's a lot of multimedia work here. The catalog is beautiful, but it frankly doesn't do justice to the show, because there are works of video, there are works of audio, there are really large sculptural works. Talk about that a little bit, about the variety of media here.
You have to see the exhibition really to really get the energy and the vibe of the show. You're right. The catalog doesn't do it justice. There, as you mentioned, there are videos, there are interactive sculptures like the one of Gabriel Orozco's ping pong table with the pond in the middle. There's a voting booth where you can vote to demolish a building in Fort Worth that is a landmark / eyesore. According to the artist's research, he researched and consulted with local architects to figure out which buildings to put on his list. And so you can actually vote and have a voice in that. And then there's like a virtual implosion that will happen for the quote unquote winner in a few months. So it's about social activation. All these, it's not really about coming to look at paintings or passively look at anything hanging on the wall or sitting on the floor. There's a lot of interaction within the exhibition.
Did you have a momentary sort of grimace when you thought about, you know, voting to demolish a building by the city, and then thought about, you know, errors made recently with buildings being demolished accidentally?
Yes. And also, actually, just the idea that how do we know now what architecture will or will not be important
20 years from now or 100 years from now. So it's, but the idea is just to get the citizens thinking and feeling like they're a part of a discussion about the city that we're in our case, in Fort Worth.
One thing that's interesting, I think, about the way that we talk about Mexico from Texas is that immigration is always the number one issue. And it certainly is something that comes up in the show. One could argue that the ping pong table piece that we've talked about has definite trans-border migration aspects to it. There's a piece that says, "Wish you were here," and it's sort of mirrored letters. But it's not necessarily the only thing that Mexicans are thinking about.
It's not a show about the borders, really. Yeah. It's really not. Mexico City is a huge urban hub, and it's the center of the art world in Mexico, like New York is the center of the art world in the U.S. So the artists there are working with, I think, what all contemporary artists work with, which are creating a dialogue with the art of the past, but also in step with what's currently going on culturally. And so, of course, there are issues of borders, but there have been shows done like that. And that wasn't the focus of this. The focus of this was daily life in interior Mexico, in Mexico.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, daily life is very different in Mexico City in the way that it's very different in New York from maybe anywhere else in the country. Can you talk about how the art markets in Mexico City influence purchases that are made by collectors who might look to Mexico or by collectors from within Mexico?
Well, a lot of the artists in the exhibition have galleries in Mexico City, and these galleries sort of established themselves in the 1990s, and they're going strong today. But a lot of these artists in Mexico City have galleries in New York, in L.A., and in Europe, and they participate in art fairs across the globe. So their work truly is circulating worldwide. And again, I was just so shocked that no one had shown, taken a deep look at their work here in our area of Texas. And I was so thrilled to be the one to get to do it.
Were there themes that you sort of noticed once the exhibition came together that you hadn't been fully aware of, even as you were planning it?
Well, it took me a while to come to daily life. I mean, I know it sounds like a simple idea for an exhibition, but when you're including this many artists in an exhibition and this many works, 23 artists, over 60 works, you know, really stretching the boundaries of our museum space, but wanting to tell a story, you kind of have to cast a wide net. And so what I was looking for was a common thread that wasn't just so specific to Mexico that it would be too esoteric for it, you know, for anyone who walked into the museum. I wanted it to be something that we could all relate to, and aspects of daily life, of course, we all can.
There are a number of works that refer to the problems of violence in Mexico, not just street crime, but drug crime and the disappearance of women. Talk a little bit about the breadth of works that you wanted to include and what you ended up with.
Well, what I did was 3.5 years ago, I started looking and visiting artist studios and visiting institutions in Mexico just to see what was going on outside of the, you know, honestly, maybe 8 artists I knew of who were working in Mexico, who were having big careers internationally. And what I started to realize was that they were dealing with these issues that we all read about in the media and know about here that have to do with the drug cartels and that have to do with police corruption and government oppression. And they're dealing with it in sometimes poetic ways, sometimes overt ways, sometimes in humorous ways. And I kind of liken it to, not to oversimplify, but I kind of liken it to how, you know, there's a reason why we go to a horror movie. We need to express those emotions. There's a reason why we go to a comedy when we want to laugh. And this exhibition has some of all of that. And these artists use all different approaches to discuss these important issues, the most important issues going on in Mexico today.
There's one really interesting installation. I think it's Teresa Margolyes, and it's well, she has several actually interesting pieces, but it's a wall full of, I don't know if they're newspaper or magazine headlines, mm-hmm. the same publication mm-hmm. over and over and over reporting these horrific crimes.
It's 1 year's worth of the magazine PM. The magazine does not come out on Sundays, so it's 1 year's worth minus Sundays, and every single cover. It's primarily red, black, and white, the covers. They cover an entire wall in the museum, and everyone has a pinup juxtaposed with a murder or some violent crime. And that's, in a way, seeing them all at once has this impact of like, wow, this is in the news every day. But in another way, has a desensitizing effect when you realize that you see something like that every single day.
I thought that piece was interesting because I think the interpretation or the takeaway might be very different on both sides of the border. So we are just struck with the volume of this. And I would think for a Mexican audience, maybe they're forced to say, what are we doing here? How are we defining ourselves as a society?
Well, I think it's probably both on both sides of the border, because if we, you know, someone raised here looks at it, we realize that we also see certain repetitive, sensationalized incidents in the media, and it's no different there. But yes, it's overwhelming.
Another piece included is an actual cinder block wall. Right? Mm-hmm. Tell us the story of that.
That's the same artist, Teresa Margolyes. The wall is from Culiacan, which is her birthplace. The wall is 13 feet long and 7 feet high, and it's made of cinder block. And it is riddled with bullet holes from an actual shootout between police and a drug cartel. So it was an actual event. The wall becomes sculpture within the museum, but it's a real object that represents real loss.
There are interesting dialogues taking place here between these Mexican artists and their counterparts all over the world. There is one really interesting piece where you have kind of an overturned obelisk, mm-hmm. and then it's been fabricated in, like, I guess, pink vinyl. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Sure. That is called Portable Broken Obelisk, and it's after the iconic modernist sculpture by Barnett Newman, Broken Obelisk. So the work is made out of this garish, bright pink fabric that is commonly used as a tarp or covering in Mexican markets. So you see it throughout Mexico. While Barnett Newman's piece is this icon of modernism and made of Corten steel and very heavy and very weighty and very important, in Eduardo Abaroa's version, it's made of this pink portable material. So the idea is that it's in dialogue with artists on the periphery or artists who are marginalized in the art world, like Mexican artists at the time that piece was made in 1991. It's not so true now. And the art world. So commenting on creating something that's portable, that is normally, of course, not at all portable. It's a monument. So it also, because it's made out of the pink tarp, the covering for Mexican markets, it speaks to issues of illegal but tolerated markets, and piracy, and all these other issues, again, in this way, local to Mexico City.
How much socialization takes place among the artists who are exhibiting pieces in this show?
Well, that's a pretty good question. A couple of the artists in this exhibition who are very, very important and influential normally do not show their works together, mm-hmm. and they haven't in over a decade, and that's Gabriel Orozco and Francis Elise. They're kind of considered two schools of thought. They each have had their own students. Some of their students are in this exhibition. There are other artists in the exhibition who normally do not show together. And the other thing about this exhibition is it includes emerging artists. So some of the ones who matured in the 1990s have never shown with such young artists as are included in the exhibition. But I wanted it to be a multi-generational look so that you could see how the artists who rose to prominence in the 90s have influenced the current youngest generation. And I think that, interestingly, since most of the artists came for the opening and will come back to speak here, they've seen the exhibition, and they've been really honest with me over the past 4 years of knowing them and having the great fortune to get to meet them. And they all have said, this feels weighty. This feels important. This feels like you can feel the history when you walk into the museum. So I think it worked out, but it was kind of the idea that I could, you know, play the role of not knowing the politics really the artists because I was an outsider.
So, Andrea, when you become aware that these sort of historical tensions exist, is there a big part of you as a curator and as a player in the art world that says, I completely respect this? Or is there part of you that's like, that's not going to fly because we need all this together? And sort of how do you manage that?
I was more of the attitude that that's not going to fly. And I'm well, I mean, I think that, you know, that's one advantage of looking in from the outside. You can be a little more objective because I'm not so interested in the gossip or the politics between the artist as I am having a full picture of the contemporary art scene in Mexico. So I could just, of course, you know, maybe secretly I'm interested in all of that, but I didn't have to bring it into the conversation for the exhibition.
Would people be surprised at how much of your job requires diplomacy skills?
Probably. And negotiating and you know, but that's what makes it interesting and that's what makes it something I love to do.
So do you do a lot of sort of background legwork before you make that first pitch to somebody?
Yes. And I went to Mexico probably 3 times before I really got brave about doing the exhibition because I'm not a Latin Americanist and I barely speak Spanish. I mean, I try, but it's terrible. And so, you know, and I've been to Mexico because I was raised in Texas all my life, to the borders and to the beach towns and whatever. But you know, normally a Latin Americanist would probably do an exhibition like this. But then I realized after a few trips that it's just contemporary art. It doesn't matter where it's from. And contemporary art is what I do. And that's the only in I need.
Andrea Carnes is my guest. She is curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and of the new show Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990. That'll be on exhibit through January 5th of 2014. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and of the new show there, Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990. Andrea Carnes is here to talk about the exhibition, which will be available for viewing through January 5th of 2014. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe talk about your experiences with Mexican art, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Can you talk a little bit about this 3-man collective? And I hope I'm going to say this right. Tercer un quinto?
Yes,
is that right?
Okay. That's right.
What do they have in the show?
They Tercer un quinto built a wall outside of the museum. It faces a large 6-point intersection in Fort Worth where Camp Bowie and University and North Bailey and 7th Street all meet. So the phrase on the wall says Mala Memoria, which means bad memory or poor memory. And they're using it in the sense of how memory is imperfect. Mm-hmm. And they normally do architectural interventions that incorporate text. So in this case, Mala Memoria, it's on this concrete wall on the museum grounds, but outside of the main part of the museum. so that when you pass it, you bring to it your own experience with memory. And of course, you see the institution behind the piece. So that's this idea of institutional memory versus personal memory versus history and the way it's biased and written and how it's also imperfect. Also, obviously, because we're in Texas and it's done by Mexican artists participating in an exhibition here, it's about Texas's relationship with Mexico.
And that wall, the actual fabrication of the wall was done by Mexican laborers, is that right?
It was, in part. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people with their hands on it. We had to do it pretty quickly. But the idea was that the words are carved by Mexican migrant workers here in Texas.
Do you plan any specific outreach to the Mexican-American community in North Texas for this show in particular?
Yes, we are having tours in Spanish. We're having the Hispanic Chamber. We're having all kinds of groups coming to the museum throughout the run of the exhibition. And we have programming of all sorts that's all on our website.
It's interesting because I wonder if many of those groups might be, again, although this is the modern, but many of those groups might be expecting something that looks different from the show that you're presenting.
People will, of course. Mm-hmm. And I mean, some people will find things that they don't like about it, and some people will find things that they do like about it. But I think that the main thing about contemporary art is that it just instigates some emotion, whether it's anger or happiness or sadness or fear or whatever it is. My hope is just that it gives an introduction to what's going on in Mexico and that it speaks to someone on some level.
Are you able, Andrea, to make a generalization, which I know will probably make you wince, but are you able to make a generalization about how these Mexican artists that you're featuring in this show define themselves as different than or similar to their peers, say, in Europe or working in New York or L.A. or Chicago?
I don't think that they want to be differentiated. Mm-hmm. I would say that, I don't know, that's a hard question, Chris. They're dealing with what's going on culturally around them, both in Mexico and in the world, and that's exactly what all good contemporary artists do. So I don't see a real distinction.
Do they think of their audiences, in any kind of geographic context?
Because a lot of them show worldwide, I don't think that they necessarily do. Often they're using topics local to Mexico, but again, that's what every artist does. You use the material around you and you do things with what you know.
The Fort Worth Star-Telegram had a great piece about the 4 weeks leading up to the exhibition. And
yes.
You sort of alluded to this earlier that it was not chaotic, but very, very, very busy in the weeks leading up. Can you talk about just the process of installing any large show where you have a number of people coming in? Just I'm curious even about the logistics, about deciding who works in which space on mm-hmm. which day.
Well, usually that is decided before the artist arrives.
Mm-hmm. So they don't get a say in the matter.
Right. Well, I mean, honestly, you couldn't let them do that because everyone would want the same space or think that one space was better than the other mm-hmm. space. So I tried to be very democratic about deciding who got what space and about giving each artist plenty of space and then stage their coming to Fort Worth over the period of a few weeks so that certainly they could run into each other and have a conversation and go out for drinks or whatever or dinner when they left the museum, but that they would be working in their own space separate from each other while they were in the museum. I think that every artist was happy. I mean, as far as I could tell, everyone felt very happy with their space. And most of them came to the opening or came before the opening to check it out. And that doesn't always happen with group exhibitions. Sometimes artists just think, well, it's just a big group show. I don't care. I can't go. I'm busy with other things. Or, you know, that can happen when it's such a large group show. But they all felt that they had a big stake in coming. Some of them were doing site-specific works, but even the ones who were not wanted to come, check out their piece, make sure it was installed in a way that they would want it to be seen. And And also, I think they wanted to come and see our Ondo building because a lot of them, so that was a draw, I have to admit. A lot of them are, you know, some of them started their careers as architects like Francis Elise, and others are just very involved in architecture, of course, of which there's plenty in Mexico City. So they were curious.
There must be an amazing kind of energy when you're working with, you know, living artists who are going to be present for the installation of their own works.
I love that part of it. I love objects, but I also love the personalities, and I like having the privilege of being someone who can help them. Because, of course, if you're the artist who made the work, you can't always see how it will look best or where it would look best or how many things or what is the best work to represent in this exhibition, your career. So my role is to help them with that, and I love that role. And it's just been such an honor to meet all of them. They're all my heroes.
We have an email here from Mary Kate who says, any idea on how this exhibition might deepen the discussion on the immigration issue currently going on in the U.S.? It seems that deepening our understanding of Mexican culture would increase intracultural understanding.
Well, I think that the very thing that she said, deepening our understanding of Mexican culture will be what is helpful. I don't know. I would like to think that this exhibition will start many conversations, but it's only been open a few days, so we'll have to see as it goes.
What do you use to gauge, other than sort of people walking through the door, what do you use to gauge the success of an exhibition or even gauge how successfully you have placed it within the space where it's going to be displayed?
Some of it's intuition. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that I feel the energy of the exhibition, and I think that other people do too when they see the show, and it's just palpable. And so there's that, and there's also, of course, how much media coverage you get or how much attention in that way, and how many people walk through the doors. And so far, it's seeming like it seems like it's a weighty exhibition in that way, mm-hmm. even though it's only been a few days.
Do you have a sense for individual works that will sort of get the most attention? I'm not going to ask you to tell me your favorites, but the ones that probably people will talk about initially with the most enthusiasm?
I think, yes, there are several works in the exhibition, and this is not based on what's my favorite, but it's just based on seeing something new within the gallery space, mm-hmm. like the ping pong table with the pond in the middle that you can actually play in the galleries, or like Teresa Margolyes' wall with bullet holes where people actually were murdered and slain in front of the wall. And, you know, there are so many works throughout the exhibition that are a different kind of work to encounter that, yes.
When you have a truly interactive work, what do you have to do to get patrons to actually buy into that? Because most people have been so well trained to touch nothing, you know, to keep a wide berth around particular works of art. And then sometimes when they're asked to participate, it feels a little scary.
It does. The only way we can do that is to have labels up or for them to see other people playing, which mm-hmm. so far is kind of what's happened. If I've played, I love to play ping pong anyway. So I've gone in there to play. And if people see you doing it, then they know that it's OK. And it's the same with the voting booths. Mm-hmm. And people don't know that they can actually go get a ballot and fill it out and vote until. I mean, there's signage, of course, but it will take a little bit of word of mouth and maybe coming to the exhibition more than once to figure all of that out.
When I hear like 4 years to plan an exhibition, it sounds like an astonishingly long time. Is that pretty average for this an exhibition of this size?
It is for an exhibition of this size. I mean, it can range, putting together, organizing an exhibition can range from a couple of years to as many as 10 years, sometimes more. I think 4 is a pretty good range for an international exhibition such as this.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, maybe halfway through, where you thought, I don't know if this is working, or did it continue to gain momentum as you went along?
There were moments every other minute. And it wasn't because I didn't believe in the work. Mm-hmm. It's just that when you're doing something that is conceptual until it starts to arrive in the museum, you know, it's all on paper, until it starts to actually arrive and physically be in the museum. So I think it's the nature of every exhibition, or maybe I just like to tell myself that to make myself feel better, but definitely it's constant up and down and up and down and up and down and sleepless nights wondering if this should be moved here or if this would make more sense in relationship to that sort of thing until the moment it opens.
Do you are there any kind of like computer-aided tools now for you to sort of populate an exhibition space with works in different places?
There are, but they don't work. I mean, they kind of give you an idea, but you know, I know the ambiance of those spaces, mm-hmm. and I know the works that I've chosen for the exhibition. But still, things change. When you get it all together, things change, and they change at the last minute. But luckily, we have a great crew, and we were able to move things around. To me, that's actually, even though I'm saying I felt up and down about it, that's actually the really fun part, because it's like a puzzle, and you're trying to work it all out.
Do you always get precise dimensions for works of significant size, or sometimes do they say it's like 12 by 14, and in fact, it's 17 by 6 or something?
That happens, mm-hmm. and that did happen. And you also get the old dimensions variable.
Uh-huh.
So some things were surprises in that way, too. Some things, you know, I hadn't seen in a couple of years. And so that when they arrived and were uncrated and I was staring at them thinking, I remembered that to be so much bigger, or I thought that was so much smaller. So that does happen. Even when you have dimensions, you know, you have to always realize that, for one thing, in this case, they were being converted from centimeters to inches. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people's hands go across those numbers and change things. And so, yes, there were surprises.
Is it now a completely simple, may be the wrong word, but is it completely standard for an institution like the Modern to be bringing work across the border? And is that all relatively simple now?
No, it's actually not that simple. I mean, logistically and just in terms of immigrations and customs and expense and everything else, it's actually pretty difficult to do, but it's worth doing. And I think most institutions know that. And when we can, we do it.
Have any other institutions asked about taking this show after it leaves Fort Worth?
We didn't. Actually, sometimes at the Modern we do exhibitions that we ask people to come to us to see, and I think people will come from mm-hmm. other places in the U.S. and from Mexico to see it. We did not try to travel it. It just logistically wasn't exactly going to work out. It just there were a number of reasons why we couldn't do that. And I think that in Mexico, there are curators who do their own exhibitions with these same artists. And so maybe that didn't make sense either.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel so strongly about it, and we think that people will come to us to see it.
It's nice to have an exclusive for Fort Worth.
Yes, definitely.
Andrea Carnes is curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and organizer of the exhibition Mexico Inside Out, Themes in Art Since 1990. You can see it on display at the Modern through January 5th, 2014. Andrea, it's been such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you so much. I love the show. I'm honored to be here.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can download that podcast and learn more about the show at kera.org/think. Send along any comments, questions, or suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.